The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray, how are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Well, I don't know how long I'll be doing this. Spoke 2 days ago to my financial guy for my retirement, and I was talking to him about retiring and living off my savings. We looked at it, and it's doable. It's very doable. I'm not sure what I'm going to do after next Tuesday, though. So I could live off my savings for a week or so, maybe. Might have to just stay here for a while. Good to have you with me. On The Doctor Is In, I'm Dr. Ray Garetti. The program, call in. That means I don't call you, you call me. Which is kind of cool, because when I was in college, I did nothing but call girls. And they didn't answer. And they didn't have, I don't even know how they did it. They didn't even have caller ID in those days. I don't know how they did it. I think I had one girl call me. And that was because she was not in class that day and she wanted my notes. And I took terrible notes, and I sent them to her, and it was only three lines, and she said, never mind, I'll get the notes from Mary Catherine, who not only had seven pages of notes, but she had dimes taped to the upper reaches of her notebook paper, because she always kept a second copy of her notes. To get onto the program, you don't need notes. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL, number to call to get onto the program. Why? Well, that's up to you. Any reason. Any reason will do, as long as it has to do with this rather narrow sliver that we call temporal life. Situations, circumstances, people, kids, troubles, emotions, general psychology questions, psychology as it interacts with faith questions. Sometimes people call in and give good comments about helping someone else. You can do this, you know. You get days lopped off your purgatory if you can call in and give a good suggestion for somebody else. Did you know that? Look it up. I looked it up. You can do that. I don't get extra credit because I'm getting paid for doing this. I get paid by the word. So I use as many words as I can and as small a words as I can. 877-573-7825 is the number to call to get on to the program. Stephen Wright is a comedian who is incredibly loose in his thinking, and I think comedians have to be loose to be creative, and he's got some great lines. One is, I was addicted to placebos. I'd give them up, except I don't think it would make any difference. You know what a placebo is? Many of you do. A placebo is something that has no effect. If it were a chemical, it would be inert. If it were a particular intervention, it would not be something that would be considered to help you. Let me explain. That's my only really good word I know from Cuba, and I learned it from Ricky Ricardo. Let me explain. Let's say I were to design a study as to whether this program would help anybody. So I get two groups. Now, I don't want to get into the details on how you make your groups equivalent, but let's make it simple. I get two groups. I divide my 168 listeners in half. So that would be what? 84. listeners. I take half of the listeners, and I say, you're my experimental group. Here's what I do with you. You are to listen to this program approximately 10 minutes a week. You can listen at any time. It's going to be flexible. Then I'm going to get another group of people, not the other half of my listeners. I'm going to, well, yes, yes. Let's take the other half of my listeners because I want to have these two groups as comparable as possible. I tell the other half, you are not to listen to the program. You are to listen to at least 10 minutes of classical music. Because we think that classical music might be beneficial to your happiness and contentment and your intellectual progression. 6 months. That is the duration of my study. 6 months. The classical music listening group is what we would call our placebo group. There isn't anything that we would speculate would be salutary or helpful in listening to classical music, as opposed to my relatively rare insights and guidance. At the end of 6 months, we find a way to measure well-being. Now, that's the hard part. How do you operationalize? That's what the shrinks call it. Operationalize. How do you measure well-being? So we come up with some kind of scale, and we're gonna measure the well-being improvement of the people who listen to this program for 6 months, minimal 10 minutes a day. And if we really want to be good about it, we have to say no more than 10 minutes. But if somebody listens for 2 hours, I don't know how they can do that, but maybe they do, that kind of confounds the results because now they're listening to a lot. We find out that, indeed, the people who listened to the program got better. Oh, yeah. Oh, and a whole bunch of... Their IQ went up 7 points. They have happier cats. Their children love them more, etc. That's what we call the experimental group. We speculate that our intervention is going to make a difference. Then we measure the people who listen to classical music. And what did we find? They got better too. What? This wasn't supposed to happen. There's nothing in research that says listening to classical music is going to make you more competent, more well off in your life. But lo and behold, we measured it. Now, hopefully, they didn't get that much better than the experimental group. In other words, the people who listened to the show, we'd want to say, got a lot better than the people who listened to classical music. I hope. Because if that's not true, well, tell EWTN and Ave just to get me off the air, run an hour's worth of classical music, and they don't have to pay me. I can give up on my minimum wage job. Why did this happen? Why did the classical music group actually get better on our measured variables? Placebo. Placebo. They expected to. They were, if you will, suspicious that whatever we were doing to them was supposed to have a beneficial effect. And lo and behold, it did. Now, this is a huge problem. Huge problem. In any kind of understanding of how something works. For example, anything you listen to in an advertisement that talks about, I did this particular supplement, I did this particular hair restorer intervention, I did all this stuff. And you got these people going, yes, yes, I got better. Yeah, well, the problem is, whenever you do that with one person or even small groups of people, they can get better just because. It has nothing to do with what they were doing. This is a huge problem. We get that on this program. People will call in and say, Dr. Ray, I let my kid chew on a piece of turkey jerky 5 days in a row. And lo and behold, his math scores went up. Now, I'm being facetious about that. However, that does happen a lot. People will say, but wait a minute. I took this supplement, or I involved myself in this particular psychotherapeutic intervention and I got better. I'm not going to argue with you. But the question becomes, did you get better because of that particular intervention, or because placebo? Let me give you just one sign of the power of placebo. In other words, expecting, if you will, that I'm going to get better because of this. Roughly, people who are diagnosed depressed in a group, if they take antidepressant medication, approximately 2/3 to 3/4 of them report getting better, feeling better, depression declining, better functioning. However, research also suggests that of that 2/3 group, upwards of 40% got better because of placebo. In other words, people responded to placebo medication at approximately a 40 to 50% level. Why? Well, because they thought they were getting a chemical that was going to help them. They thought they were going to get something that's going to make them feel better. Lo and behold. Now, how do I conclude this? I'm hoping that what we do here is not just placebo. I mean, some of you folks who email me and say that you feel better or you're thinking better or you're made a decision that worked out well for you, let's not say this is placebo here. Because otherwise, if it is, what we can do is just have one blank hour during this time and we can call it nobody is in and you're going to get better anyway. 877-573-7825.
What's the deal with Dr. Ray? I mean, is he a psychologist or a comedian?
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999. Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Started drinking beer on Saturday nights. Sleeping in on Sunday mornings, missing Mass, and it just became a pattern and continued. Without God, I don't know where I'd be right now. I know the importance of the Eucharist. I know the importance of the sacraments that I didn't know at a young age. I follow God's will because my desire is to get to heaven. Our lives are rich and full by being members of the church.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
I joined a support group, one of those support groups, you know, for procrastinators. I joined them, I think it was last year. We haven't met yet, But I think eventually we're going on. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Thanks for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday. A lot of calls up there. A lot of interesting suggestions. This is one I have talked about in previous manologues. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
You didn't say, you didn't say like, you didn't say, you didn't say, well.
No, I don't do that.
God bless you. If you, you know what? If you don't do that, you are more articulate than 90% of the people on TV who talk.
Oh, my goodness.
You are. Listen to them sometime. First of all,
I know.
Whenever they're asked a question, 90% of them start out with, well, or well, I mean, or listen, or well, okay, so like in a situation, I mean, like that, what would you do with like someone who said something like that, you know? That's what they sound like.
I grew up in a grammatically correct family.
Well, you then notice it very obviously that that occurs.
Yes, sir.
You know what I know, and I've commented about this before. I don't know when the like thing started, probably 25, 30 years ago. And it was a word that belonged to a caricature of the Valley Girl from California. And when people imitated how these kind of fluffy, I'm doing it now because I can't think of the word, these fluffy 20-somethings talked. Well, like, I didn't mean to, like, say that, but then she told me, like, there's no way, and I said, yeah, like, there is. What has happened? I called it the revenge of the Valley Girls because the whole culture now talks this way.
Right.
Like has become, in some respects, a comma. You know as well as I do, when someone quotes someone, they have their sentence, then they have the comma, then they have the quote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we don't use a comma, we use like. So then he said like, I'm not going to go. And I said like, yeah, you are. And he said like, no way. I talked to a friend, my executive producer of the TV show, who was in TV for 50 years. They call them crutch words. Anything that fills up silence, anything that allows me to think of my next thought that gives me pause. So, for example, if I want to explain something to you, Mary, and you say, Dr. A, why do you think people use all those words? And I'm thinking, well, now see, as soon as I said that, I'm buying myself a half a second. Well, there's another half a second. I think that, and I'm formulating thoughts, but I don't want there to be silence. So I throw these words in that are useless. I've listened to
So why don't I do that then?
Because, one, it wasn't common when you were growing up. That's one. Okay. Two, your family obviously emphasized articulation.
Right.
It's a. It
now
is
my daughter does say, you know what I mean, which is annoying too.
Yes, at the end of every sentence. So, Mom, I was pulling into this parking spot, and there were two places there. You know what I mean? And so I went inside, and I was talking to the lady, and she looked at me like, "What are you doing here?" You know what I mean? And I know it. Mm-hmm. I have relatives who do this, and sometimes I will say, "Yes, I know what you mean." And they just keep going anyway.
Are they fillers, Dr. Ray?
Yes, they are
they fillers.
They are fillers, and they are to make sure that you understand exactly what I'm telling you. I am not the most articulate guy because I listen to recordings of this show, which I don't like to do because it's awful, and I hear myself using those filler words. Perhaps not as much as a lot of people on TV, but they're there. You know what my, well, you know one of my big filler words is? Okay.
No.
No, that's what it is. It's okay. I will say something like, you realize that what he's doing there is to make you feel guilty, okay? See? It's like, do you understand what I'm saying to you? Which I try to... Here's what happens. You got to slow down your talk and be comfortable with those split seconds of silence. Otherwise, you will find something to fill it.
So how do you break somebody of, you know what I mean? Because it's kind of annoying.
Don't forget it. Mary, let it go. Not worth your battle.
Okay.
Don't even do it.
All these politicians, you know what I, what is it? You know.
Yes. Oh, of course. Of course, because they're trying to choose their words. They're trying to figure out how to say it exactly so they don't offend or so they come across slippery. Of course. Very true.
Has anyone tried to do research on this? Or?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know anything about that. It would be worth it to see if you can check it out, to see how often. Okay. Well, our former president, we had a former president that just used and by the thousands. And it was interesting because I was always fascinated because people said he was so articulate. I listened to him. And I thought, maybe if you take away the uhs and the ums, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. But when did you know start up?
You got me on that one. You know?
Okay.
I have no idea. There's just a lot of them. But one of the points, I know I'm taking a lot of time on this because it's such a fascinating topic for me. One of the interesting phenomenon that has always intrigued me is how quickly a mode of speaking can come into the language and be used by everybody. For example, I'll let you go after this because I had a lot of folks up there, but
okay,
perfect. Listen to people when you tell them something. Say, for example, you're making an order for something and you say, here's my address. They'll say, what is your address? You tell them, they go, perfect. Or you say, well, I'd like to drive in, say, at 12:10. Perfect. I noticed. The word perfect is everywhere now on the most mundane kind of information. Tell me your son's name. My son's name is Andrew. Perfect. Just pay attention, Mary. You will see it. Thank you, dear. Thank you for the call. Oh, gosh. I know my producer's going to get mad at me because I spent so much time, but that's such a fascinating thing for me. Maria from Detroit has a sibling. Maria says this sibling is involved with a lot of evil. Now, that's a pretty broad statement. We don't know exactly what that means. And Maria says, I asked God, I prayed to God, why is this brother of mine involved with all this stuff? And Maria says, well, she says the answer she believes she got so that she could pray for him. Okay. Hi, Maria.
God bless you.
Well, I didn't even sneeze,
Mr.
but
genius,
go.
Comic genius, and a psychologist to boot. And
hey,
graphic.
wait a minute, Andrew, flag
fantastic.
That one. Flag that one for
perfect.
Future bumper music. You better. It's wonderful. I love it. I'd have taken
perfect,
your call
perfect,
right away,
Dr. Ray.
You think there's a relationship? Now, wait a minute. This is an interesting tie. You think there is a relationship between somebody being attracted to the dark side and them having someone faithful in their lives to pray for them?
Dr. Ray, I have found that this has turned darkness into light for many people that I've shared it with. It did for me. As you said, I asked God, why is this happening in my family with my sibling, I said, but it actually is my brother, and they somehow got it to you with my brother. I wasn't going to say that, but it is my brother who is involved with a lot of evil. And I asked God, and I got back immediately, so that you will pray for him. And I got an inner infusion of knowledge that God places specifically by religious people, others who are on their way to hell. And he does this knowing that really religious person will pray for that person. And
well, stay there. Maria, you're going to get knocked off the air here in about 10 seconds. Stay there because I agree and I don't agree. Hold on.
Have a good day. Father Benedict Groeschel.
I want to welcome you, if you're not familiar, with the wonderful world of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. What will America become if it makes it impossible for the Holy Spirit to work here because of untruth and self-indulgence and paganism? This is not just a nice discussion of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, because I'm going to discuss what happens when people make it impossible to be prudent, just, or honest, or brave, or courageous, or reverent. When people make that impossible, what a terrible thing they do not only to themselves, but to our society.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Why is sacrifice an important part of worship? The Catholic Catechism tells us that it is right and good to offer sacrifice to God as a sign of adoration, gratitude, supplication, and communion. What is the sacrifice most pleasing to God? Psalm 51 says, "It is a broken spirit." What does that mean? Paragraph 2100 of the Catechism counsels, "Outward sacrifice, to be genuine, must be an expression of inward spiritual sacrifice." Old Covenant prophets denounced sacrifices that were not from the heart or not coupled with love of neighbor. The one perfect sacrifice was Jesus' agony and death on the cross. By uniting ourselves with the Lord's sacrifice, we can make our lives a sacrifice to God. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I've lost my mind, but I'm pretty sure one of my kids took it. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In. What did you Friday? I am continuing a call with Maria from Detroit. She has a brother who, and we don't have to get specific about this, but she says is involved with a lot of evil. She prayed to God for this brother, and she got this intuition that said, well, you're supposed to pray for him, which led her to the conclusion that when there are folks who are dramatically attracted to the dark side, God puts people in their lives who are faithful people to pray for them. Maria, do I have that right?
Sort of. It's anybody who is on their way to hell. If you are a religious person, you find that in your family you have people who are really, really, really going the wrong direction. This was the atmosphere of the situation. I wouldn't say it has to be people who are, you know, as drastically into evil per se as my dear sibling. May the precious blood of Jesus cover him and everybody like him, which is the short prayer that I say when he pops into my mind. But that God let me know, and I'm a religion teacher and a missionary, and I'm, by God's grace, I'm a little honed in.
Well, let me hurry along here, dear, because I got to hurry along.
Okay.
Here's where I agree with you.
It wasn't just my imagination, okay, is what I'm trying to emphasize. Anyway, and
here's where I agree with you, and here's where I don't. I agree with you in that, of course, we're supposed to pray, especially for those who are struggling and are moving away from God. Of course. Where I'm not so parallel with your thinking is that God orchestrates and says, okay, I'm going to plant this person like Maria as a sibling, for example, to this brother so that she can pray for him. I don't know that. I mean, that could be, but I'm not sure that that's a standard tactic that God does. That's all I'm saying. But it doesn't really matter, because you're there and you are praying for your brother, which is a wonderful thing to do, of course. And perhaps all those holy, holy prayers of yours, those good, good intentions, will be the only thing that will someday make your brother turn back over his shoulder and look and see who he's running from. Bless you, Maria. Good stuff. Thank you. Let me run here. All right, I got to get Cindy from Bismarck because I'm not sure of the question. I don't quite understand it. Cindy, what is the question?
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Hi.
When transitioning from the the thoughts of the culture into a more faith-filled thinking, are there common pitfalls? Are there any things that we maybe go too hard, too zealous, are there mistakes that are made along the way?
Are you saying, see, I'm allowed to say that because I'm a psychologist. I'm allowed to say, are you saying, or I hear you saying. See, you can't say that, Cindy, because you are not professionally trained. If you say, I hear you saying, you'll stumble all over yourself. But I had, I think it was 2 or 3 one-hour sessions learning how to properly say, I hear you saying. So just to tell you that. Are you saying that we can become unrelatable to people if, the culture is heading in one direction and our thinking is so opposite theirs that we just turn them off? They don't want to have anything to do with us. They look at us like we're bizarros, that we are not, in fact, relatable at all. There's no touch point whatsoever in this relationship. That's Cindy. We know how Cindy thinks. Don't even talk to Cindy. She's a lunatic. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It's easy
so
to do.
Unrelatable. Yeah.
Yeah. It is easy to do. And I think that's one of the biggest struggles of someone who wants to be in the world, but not of the world, to use the cliche. How do you, for example, I have relatives that are so far from me in their thinking about morality, about abortion, about all of the controversial moral issues of our day. So how do I relate to them? Do I just come across with the attitude of, look, you and I are not even in the same world, so you live your life, I'll live mine. I can't do that. I can't do that. So I think I've taken kind of a balanced approach, which is I'll talk with you about things that are relatively safe. And then, if something comes up, for example, you make the observation that, well, I think that it's healthcare that a woman can decide to get an abortion anytime she wants. It's her body and she can do what she wants. I might say something like, is it a baby or not? In other words, I'm just trying to understand how you got to that point in your thinking. I want you to explain yourself to me because I'm not going to turn around and challenge you right off the bat because you'll just shut me down. Well, that's your opinion, Ray. Well, I have my opinion. No, I want to know how you got there. If you think that's okay. If you think that's all right. All right. Or for example, someone who doesn't believe in God. I might just ask. I might say, well, how did you decide that? I'm curious. How did you decide there was no God? And then, of course, they'll give you all kinds of really shallow reasons because most thinking that there is no God doesn't really have any roots in cement. Okay, I now have more grist for questioning. That's how I do it, Cindy. I don't bust against them because right away, quick, that causes a problem.
Yeah.
So I'll say, okay. Please help me understand. I want to understand how you think this way. Now, of course, that may get us nowhere, or it may get them very angry at you because when people are asked to defend and make sense of how they think, oftentimes they haven't thought it through. So when you're asking gently probing questions, they get mad. Why are you doing this? In so many words. You're challenging me in so many words. No, I'm not challenging you. I'm just trying to understand how I got to that point. Good luck with it. It's something that I've been doing for years, and it's hard to do. Really hard to do. Some moral topics I just do not bring up with close people because I recognize that it would be ugly within about 2.5 seconds.
Okay.
All right, Sin. Thank you, dear.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Talk to you. I got about, okay, let me quickly get in a plea, an advertisement. For the TV show, we need audience members. We'd love to have you. November 18th, 19th, North Canton, Ohio, Walsh University. We have Father Leo Paddling Hug coming in for two shows on the 18th. You like Father Leo? You don't have to like me. Like Father Leo, we're going to have some real fun with him cooking. Go to my website, drray.com/tickets. You'll find out when the shows are, which ones you want to come to, the people to contact to say, reserve me a spot. 18th, 19th, Father Leo Paddling Hug is on the 18th. The 19th, we will do shows at 5 and 7 with the new, also our guest will be the new president of Walsh University, Dr. Tim Collins. I'll be there. Hey, it's my show.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
a
priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now, and I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. The Catholic faith has enemies. We're Catholics. We have enemies. They are a danger to the faith. And yet we're called to defend the faith, to instruct the ignorant, and to love our enemies. These enemies abuse divine revelation. They abuse science and religion. They abuse our history and our past. They abuse power and wealth. We have to learn how to deal with our enemies by picking up a copy of my book, Dangers to the Faith. You can find it online at AveMariaRadio.net.
The idea that you're going to beat yourself up over this is nuts. Stop it. Stop it. And sometimes that is the best psychology. Just stop it.
How do I stop it, Dr. A?
Sometimes you just have to resolve to quit it.
Well, I say things I shouldn't say to people. How do I not do that?
Don't do it.
Well, but how do I not do it?
Don't do it. Bob Newhart had one of the best bits I've ever seen. He advertised himself as a psychologist with a new technique, guaranteed to work in 2 minutes. A woman comes into his office with multiple neuroses and life problems. She begins,
"Well, I know sometimes when I'm in situations that I really feel uncomfortable, I just have this urge to run."
Stop it.
What? What?
Stop it.
So what that tends to happen is that I start complaining. I know people don't want to listen to me, but I start complaining.
Stop it.
Huh?
Stop it. He goes on like this as his technique, and it was meant to be. It was meant to be a parody, but there sure is a few grains of truth in that. Real quickly, a caller, do you know of any psychiatrist in the Oklahoma City area? If you're looking for Catholic, two places you could look. One is CatholicTherapist.com, or call the folks there. at Oklahoma City, our radio affiliate, their EWTN affiliate. They may know of someone. Jonathan, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, bro.
Sure, buddy.
Like, totally. Anyways, yeah, no, so my question is about reverse psychology and positive reinforcement. Lately, I've been seeing a lot of front yard signs out there that have the anti-suicide message or suicide awareness stuff. Stuff like, you are not alone, you are loved, which makes some people, I'm assuming, ask themselves questions like, am I loved? Why would this sign tell me I'm loved if I'm not loved, or if I'm loved? What? You know what I mean?
I think they're trying to reach the people. Well, I know what you're saying.
Right.
This is the old, if we make our intervention high profile, do we actually put it into the minds of people who otherwise wouldn't think that way?
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was looking at the local daily reports online, and I've been noticing, well, my neighborhood, suicide is common every now and then, but it's gone up. And I just think, I'm just wondering how do you go about, I'm wondering if these signs are at fault for that. I mean, I realize people are trying to.
No.
No?
No. How should I respond here? We are a progressively more unhappy culture, which is ironic because in the world history, we are the best fed. We are the richest, we are the wealthiest, we are the most secure, we are the safest, we are the most pleasure-seeking culture in human history. That's a given. But yet we're among the most miserable, which tells you something about seeking God. Nothing satisfies unless fully you're seeking God. So, the suicide rates have jumped dramatically, especially among teens. Folks are saying we've got to let people know they have options. There's interventions out there. This comes from the fact, Jonathan, that a lot of the mindset is the reason people don't seek help is because they're not aware that it's available. So let's make sure they know it's available. Now, your question is, well, what about those people that have never really thought about whether they're loved or not? And there's the sign that says, hey, just want to remind you, you're loved. And you're thinking, I thought I was. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not loved. Maybe I'm miserable. Gee, that's what your worry is, correct?
Well, yes, it's for the most part, yeah. That's, yeah, reverse psychology there. That sign making you wake up to ask yourself questions that you normally wouldn't have, you know.
Sure. I understand that. And there may be that risk in other areas. However, for example, an area of sex education with five-year-olds. In that area, let's tell the kids about all these things that are risky, all these things they need to know sexually at age five. Yes, I agree with you totally. That causes far more problems than it attempts to correct. Far. Explosively so. But in something like this, I think at worst, these signs are neutral. In other words, they don't influence people either way. A desire to commit suicide is oftentimes linked to incredible life dissatisfaction, if not serious clinical depression. And so the sign would be, it'd be a small component in any of that, if at all. I think the signs are, I think, Jonathan, the signs are a reflection of, they're trying to do something.
Right, advertising is a very powerful tool.
But you know the sad part of it? Here's the sad part of it. It's the 800-pound gorilla in the living room. There are so many things in our culture that we have allowed to simply run amok. and we've made no attempt to do our very best as a culture to breed morality or to breed safety in families or to do those things that 50, 60, 70 years ago were much more glue in our culture. We've just let all that dissolve. And we don't look in that direction for the causes. We don't. Thank you, Jonathan. Great call. This is Dr. A. I appreciate the company. When we come back, got some more ladies that want to talk to me.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company, and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for October is the EWTN Family Celebration from Denver, Colorado. John Ed Williams, Father Mitch Pacwa, Dr. David Anders, Father Innocent, Father Augustino, and Father Angelus show us how faith can move mountains. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. Do you ever feel guilty when you do something wrong? Guilt is a natural law of the universe, just like gravity. Gravity reminds us not to do certain things with our bodies without suffering painful consequences. Guilt is the psychological pain we experience after we did something wrong. It's also a warning that we need to fix the problem by finding forgiveness, making restitution, and going to confession. And that's something to appreciate. Today, ask someone to forgive you for what you did wrong, and tell them how much you appreciate feeling guilty and for the right of reconciliation. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
About 2 months ago, I went on one of those once-in-a-lifetime holidays that they advertise. I'll tell you what, never again. All righty, let's talk about the different ages that can abuse parents. We'll start out with the 15-year-old. Maria is calling for her friend. She said, well, what do I do here? Her 15-year-old child abuses her. What kind of abuse, Maria? Punching? Yelling? Screaming?
Yeah. I believe it's physical.
Whoa.
And yeah, I just wondered in general if there were any county resources or any resources that were available.
Well, she could call the local probation department in Columbus and say, I've got a kid who's physically violent to me. I worry about my safety. She could get them involved. She's allowed to do that. She can call and she can ask them. She can say, here's my situation. Now, if they refer this 15-year-old for counseling, by and large, that's a futile gesture. Because we don't know what all the dynamics are in this 15-year-old beating her up. But she does, I think, need to protect herself. And she may have to involve the legal authorities in something like this. Okay, that could I don't know, but it could be domestic violence. I have some books on authority and putting parents back in charge. The one that would probably most help her would be called Good Discipline, Great Teens. My producer, Andrew Kruchek, yelled at me because he said, you're just trying to hawk a book as opposed to help the lady. And I said, well, no, because the book can give her about 8 hours worth of advice as opposed to me talking for 3 minutes. He says, okay. If she reads it, which is, of course, true. So Given that, Maria, that I don't know all, obviously, the circumstances surrounding your friend, the dynamics of the family, whether there's a dad, whether there isn't, what this child has been doing for the last 10 years, who the child's hanging with, what kind of social media there is, just all those factors, I'm sure, are swirling around in that situation. So,
yeah.
It would seem like if she's getting physically assaulted by a boy or a girl?
Boy.
Okay, he could hurt her. A girl could, yes, too, but he's more likely to hurt her. Is she a single mom?
She's widowed, so yes.
Yeah, oh my.
And she doesn't have any, she's older, so her parents are deceased and all of her immediate family is deceased. Yes.
Somebody comes into my office complaining that a 15-year-old boy is beating them up. One of the first options I suggest to them is calling the legal authorities and stopping that. Then we can work on some of the other stuff. But the child has to realize, I am no longer permitted to beat up my mother. She can't stop me, but the law can.
Okay.
All right, dear. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. Well, we got another one here, but it's a good thing she's only four. That's right. She gets emotional, too, and she probably takes a few swings and does some kicking and all of this stuff. But Ruthie from Grand Rapids says, well, you know, what do I do? Should I let her just burn herself out? Hi, Ruthie.
Hi.
So you got a kid throwing a fit. What do you do about it?
I mean, kind of, yeah. So she's my third, and she's just like a classic melancholic kid, really strong emotions and strong feelings. And there's sometimes where I can see, you know, okay, she's just really upset about this and she needs to process her feelings and get it out. But there's other times where, you know,
what books you've been reading, Ruthie, what books have you been reading?
I don't know a lot of them.
She's got to process her feelings and let her get them out.
I don't want her to. I know the danger of like telling kids you're too emotional. You know, I don't want that God-given sensitivity that she has to be squelched. But I also want her to learn to regulate her emotions and not.
Well, of course you do.
That she shouldn't be, right?
Ruthie,
I don't know how to. Yes.
First thing you got to do is you got to quit second guessing yourself.
Okay.
When she throws these fits, okay, they got emotions attached to them, but I would bet they also got a lot of ugliness attached to them, don't they? She's nasty. True?
Yeah, sure.
Well, sure. So the question is, do you want your little 4-year-old daughter to learn to be nasty every time she gets upset about something?
No.
All right. So you have every right as a mother to tell your little daughter, if you do this, this is what I'm going to do about it. Now, whether that means you take away 5 privileges, whether that means you take her favorite stuffed animal, whether that means you send her to bed early, whether that means you stand her in a corner till you're satisfied, because, yeah, you're right, and I've heard all kinds of child development people say this. Well, their emotions are bigger than they are, and they really don't know how to deal with those emotions. You know, you've read that stuff.
Yeah. Right. And I'm not like a super softy mom, and I think that that's part of my problem, is that I don't have the really big, strong emotions that she does. So,
well, wait a minute, Ruthie.
I guess I don't know how to deal with
it. I can't see you from here, but I'm gonna say something on the basis of years of training.
Okay.
Are you older than 4?
Yes.
Okay. I was hoping I'd be right on that one. Because, yeah, you're not emotional, but that's probably because you're a lot more controlled because you're a grown-up. 4-year-olds routinely will do this kind of stuff. Why? Well, because they're mad. They're upset. Things aren't going the way they want. So I let it all hang out. I'm not constrained by any of these social rules. I can kick. I can scream. I can yell. I can flop. You try doing that once. So You'll hurt yourself. So last time I threw a fit on my wife, I threw myself on the floor and I just really wrenched my shoulder. So given that, you have to decide with your little girl. You have to tell her, you know, when you throw these fits on me, here's what I'm going to do about this. And then do it.
So what about, like, like, okay, she's trying to do something on her own, and she's frustrated that she can't do it on her own. Like, this morning she was trying to get her dress on, and she couldn't get her dress on all by herself. And she's screaming and throwing this massive...
No, no!
...episode because she's...
Hey,
it's
Ruthie!
She can't do it herself. And I,
Ruthie!
And I'm telling her...
I gotta go. I got 20 seconds. Is it okay that she throws a massive fit because something doesn't go the way she wants? She can be upset about it. She can be unhappy. She can even cry. But to throw this crazy fit, it's not what you want her to do, is it? I gotta run. I'm Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me. I'm throwing a fit. Walk with God. Hold your kids tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.